Welcome, everyone, to episode 539 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are here to recap a very quiet first 2 days of NBA free agency. Oh, wait, no, it's been totally insane. So we're going to talk about all of the trades and trade rumors that have been popping up and some of the biggest signings that have happened over the first 48 hours of free agency. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews, and we're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is Andre Drummond's biggest new stan, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well. No, I want to clarify that. So, yes, I did do that thread on Twitter, but it was because I think Drummond got unnecessarily hackled. Like, I think Bulls fans had a tendency to paint Drummond as someone who shouldn't even play in China. And I thought that was a little bit ridiculous. Like, yeah. He signed 2 years, $6.6 million. Like, for what he is, that's fine value. Like, I don't mind it. And he still gobbles up rebounds like it's nothing. Yeah. And then I just kind of took the approach that, look, the guy hasn't had a stable working environment for 2.5 years. Like, legitimately, since playing for the Pistons, he has not played 50 games for any other franchise. So, like, isn't it reasonable to think that if he has a steady role for a team, maybe, just maybe, being a actual human being like the rest of us, that he plays better or more efficiently because he has that sense of structure and stability?
I mean, I have no beef. Like, Lord knows, I was a fan of Andre Drummond last year. I got to experience Andre Drummond for a couple months on the Sixers. He was by far the best consistent backup to Joel Embiid that they've had ever. I mean, you know, I think there are concerns with, is he playable in the playoffs? Like, our team's going to target him. But frankly, like, that is a concern for April. And at the price point that they paid for him, it's not that big of a concern. It's not like they spent the full non-taxpayer mid-level on him. They spent like a tiny portion of it, presumably, right? Or it's like close enough that they might have even just gotten him on a minimum deal.
Yeah, it was the min, and that apparently was a little bit weird. They did spend part of their MLE, which... Yeah, I mean, it's so close to the min, you have to wonder why they didn't. I do wonder, though, like, right now that's the reported number. I do wonder if they are in contact with him and if someone becomes available or is available where they basically think they can justify using the full non-tax MLE. That they go to him and say, okay, look, can we work something out? Yeah. I don't know. But as of right now, they have $7.3 million left on their non-tax MLE. Okay. But we'll get back to that because we aren't sure if they're going to use it because of luxury tax concerns. And we'll have a major discussion about that later on in the show.
Yeah, but let's first get to the trades section because holy hell. I mean, I have been, full disclosure, I am in Chicago this week. My wife's grandfather turned 90 on Thursday. So we are in town celebrating that. So I've been like driving. We were driving into downtown on Thursday to visit some of our friends from medical school. And as we were driving in, I believe, or as we were driving out, no, this was yesterday, right? Friday? Yeah, I was picking up her dad and her brother from the airport. And then as I'm driving back to her grandparents' house, I get the Woj push alert, the Shams push alert. I don't know who the hell broke this news first. But, oh, by the way, Rudy Gobert is not on the Utah Jazz anymore. The Minnesota Timberwolves traded Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Jared Vanderbilt, a couple, I think one other.
Walker Kessler.
Yeah, and then like some other salary filler. Plus 2023, 2025, 2027, all fully unprotected first round picks. 2029, I believe, is protected. And a 2026 pick swap. We heard, I think Jake Fisher was the one who first reported that the Timberwolves had been sniffing around traditional centers, which at the time was like, huh, that's interesting. But no one really made anything of it because like that was in the midst of the draft and Kyrie stuff. And there's been so much other nonsense going on because that's the time of year it is. What do you think of the price that the Timberwolves paid for Rudy Gobert? Let's start from the Timberwolves side, because they're the ones who now have Rudy Gobert. They've got this Towns-Gobert front court pairing. So what do you think of the price they paid? And then also, how do you envision the Towns-Gobert pairing working?
I absolutely hate the price that they paid. I think it was way, way too much. And I say that actually as a fan of the acquisition overall. Like,
interesting.
No, I understand the logic of what they were trying to do, and I'm actually intrigued by it. So, sure. And like, I think they're significantly better. Are they better to the extent of what they gave up, though, long term?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think this was highway robbery for Utah. Look, you know how I feel about Gobert. We had like a 20, 25-minute segment on Gobert a few weeks ago. Like, I still think he is one of the best defenders of all time. I absolutely love him, but I do think that there are concerns about him in terms of, like, what is the upside offensively. Mm-hmm. Now, and that was because we put him in connection with the Bulls. With the Wolves, however, I think the concerns are a little bit less, because now you have Karl-Anthony Towns alongside him, who is that do-it-all big man that who outside of the Nuggets, no one really has that. Like, Cat can both, he can play make, he can dribble, you know, he can pass, he can shoot. He's arguably the best shooting big man of all time already, 3-point shooter at least. Like, he's just such a valuable offensive player that I think it just negates some of the issues around Gobert. And so I like it. I like that you now have Cat free roaming defensively. And he like trying to funnel guys towards Gobert. That, I think, is going to be supremely interesting. Now, I hated that they gave up Jared Vanderbilt, because wow, would I have liked to see just for a short period of time, like Vando Gobert minutes. That would have been awful offensively, but defensively, good lord, that would have been fun to watch. I love it. I love the fit. I love the talent. I hate what they gave up. It was so much. And if this fails, they're screwed. They cashed in every chip they had. And I just don't know if this was the guy they should have cashed in all their chips for.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that Tim Connolly, who was the Nuggets former executive and has gotten a close look at Gobert over the years, that this was the piece that he went all in on. It's interesting from a player evaluation standpoint of Towns that he thinks we want Towns as our four, basically. We don't want Karl-Anthony Towns as our full-time starting five. Like, this is what Anthony Davis has been clamoring for years. And it's
Davis is so pissed right now.
I know. And it's like the exact opposite of what everyone wants Anthony Davis to do. It's like, you would be a perfect modern five. He's like, no, I don't want to be. I want to be a four. Towns, it seemed like you would be a perfect modern five. Like, you're not the best defender, not the best rim protector, not great at pick and roll coverage, whatever. But we'll now get to see him theoretically. Like, he'll play backup five, presumably, but he's going to spend most of his minutes at the four, because Gobert certainly is not going to play that position. My question, fit-wise, especially that they gave up Beverly and Vando, like, what we've seen with Gobert in the playoffs the last couple years with the Jazz is not that he got exposed necessarily. It's that they just didn't have any good perimeter defenders. And so he got put on an island and he couldn't cover up. Like, you know, when he got drawn out, if teams go five out, he's out on the perimeter. And, you know, someone blows by Donovan Mitchell or Bojan Bogdanovic, whoever. Like, he's not quick enough to recover. The Timberwolves just gave up Beverly and Vando, arguably their two best defenders. Like, are we going to run into the same situation with them?
No. Nope.
You don't think so?
Jaden McDaniels is still on the roster.
He is. That's only one player, though.
He is, but I anticipate him getting slotted down to like the three and playing just an ungodly amount of minutes.
Yeah.
And
he might have to.
He will have to, yes. And I think highly of him. I think very, very highly of him. I think He has a lot of potential to be one of the premier two-way players in this league. Not saying that he's going to be like a premier 25-point scorer or necessarily like a Gobert-level defender, but like his baseline for both sides of the floor, it's just so high that I anticipate something like this to unlock him a little bit. Like, he's 6'9", he's super switchy, he's athletic, he's quick on his feet. I love it. And then here's the little dirty secret. Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. We know what he can do from an athletic standpoint. We know what he can do offensively. We know that he's going to carry a lot of that burden as well. But there's nothing preventing him from becoming a good defender.
Yeah.
Like, I think over the first 2 years, he was sort of forced into a role where he had to score the basketball at a very, very high rate. He still needs to do that, though, but with Gobert taking up so much of the defensive responsibility now, that kind of allows Towns to focus even more on offense. Like, the Wolves basically said to Towns, you know what? We don't need you to do any of that stuff anymore. We don't need you to go in and be the rim protector, to be the final line of defense. We are unlocking you to just put up 30. And it actually took me back, Brian, and this, again, this proves how old you and I we are, because this takes me back to when the Suns traded for Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, God. Wow. All right. Yeah. We are dating ourselves big time. Good.
Yeah, really. It unlocked Amari Stoudemire fully. He had played center for a long time.
Yep.
In came Shaq, and Amari started averaging like 29 points over the final few months of the season or something along those lines, 28, 29 points. He absolutely beasted. Because the Suns more or less gave him that opportunity to just play off of Shaq in the sense that, look, Shaq is the center. He's going to handle the big boys, even defensively, even though he's old and slow. Like, he's going to do those things. Your job is to score. Grab rebounds, push the tempo, score. Can we agree that Karl Anthony Towns is even more multifaceted offensively than Amari Stoudemire? I think we can.
Yeah, without question.
So imagine what he could do next year. And if he takes up that mantle, if he takes on that level of responsibility offensively, that allows Anthony Edwards to pick and choose his spots a little bit more on offense, not having to exert that amount of energy, and for him to be able to focus a little bit more on defense, where, again, he has a tremendous, tremendous athletic advantage. And I remember saying when he came into the draft, because you and I did a lot of draft coverage that year, I kept saying, this guy, if he wants to, could become one of the best defenders in the NBA, because the way that he's built, his athleticism, the way he moves his feet, it's all about buy-in to him. It's all about studying the game of basketball from a defensive perspective and buying in. If he does that, good Lord, we could see one of the best two-way players like in the league over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. Like, there, you can see the upside of this trade. I'm with you in thinking I would not have imagined that Gobert got three fully unprotected firsts, first as pick swap, and productive role players in Vando, Pat Bev, Beasley, I didn't think had a ton of trade value, so that doesn't shock. But like the Jazz got a heist for Gobert. That, like,
they did.
With all due respect to Rudy, who three-time defensive player of the year, you know what he brings, screen assist, blah blah blah, whatever. Like, I did not envision them getting this type of haul, but we say it all the time when it comes to these types of trades. It only takes one team. 28 teams might think, nope, we're not offering more. Like, you know, the Bulls were rumored as a Gobert landing spot, and there was debate of, like, is Vucevic and Pat Williams enough? And a lot of Bulls fans said that's too much. Mm-hmm. But the Timberwolves have new ownership, new management. They just made the playoffs for the second time in, like, 20 years. Right. They're desperate. And, if a team can prey on desperation, Danny Ainge has done this before. He did this with the Brooklyn Nets in the early 2010s. And there's a chance, you know, Karl Anthony Towns just signed a gigantic Supermax extension as soon as he was eligible to. So Gobert's under contract long-term. Towns is under contract long-term. They're not letting Anthony Edwards go. He's going to get a max deal as soon as he's eligible. We'll see what happens with D'Angelo Russell, but like they've got the Edwards, Towns, Gobert core locked up long term.
Yeah.
I'm just skeptical. Their title odds, they are now plus 3,900. So they are 13th on FanDuel in terms of overall odds, below the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, the Nets, hilariously, which we will get to shortly. Ahead of the Bulls and Raptors, but like this moved their odds, but for a trade where you're giving away so much draft capital, this didn't move their odds enough. Like, I'm still not convinced. Yeah, there may be a top six team in the West, but I'm not like 100% sure of that.
I mean, they need to be. They need to be. Like, right now, and this is something that I think has gone unmentioned in the broader coverage of this trade. They cashed in their chips. Now they're in it. This is like the Philadelphia 76ers when they traded for Harden.
Right. Like,
there is no excuse now. I know it sounds rough, but I mean, you're in it to win it. I think the Sixers not winning the championship this year, that was a fail on their part. And you can sit there afterwards and logically go, well, they didn't X, Y, and Z. Doesn't matter. When you cash in your chips, it's because you're trying to win. The Bulls, frankly, are in the same situation. Like, they cash in their future. They were shopping Patrick Williams. They were ready to cash in on everything. Like, teams that go all in trying to win now, there's no excuse. You have to put yourself in a situation to try to win the title. And if you cash in everything that you have and you end up being, I don't know, like a play-in tournament team or something like that, something has gone dramatically wrong. So for the Wolves, they better be in that top six. Hell, they better be in that top five given what they gave up here.
Yeah, I'm like, would you take them over Golden State next year?
No.
Clippers?
I don't think so, no.
Assuming health. Nuggets?
Right. No. Assuming health again?
Yeah. Assuming MPJ and Porter are fine.
Okay, no.
Yeah. Grizzlies?
Wash.
Mavericks?
So Mavericks is tough because they changed their roster so much. Just in terms of having like a big man now who can actually do stuff. Also Wash, I think. Like that, I think that's the category, like Memphis, Minnesota, and Dallas. Like it seems like they're in that same grouping.
And I deliberately left Phoenix out of it because we'll get to them. Who the hell knows what their roster is.
We don't know, right?
Yeah. But like that's what I'm saying. They are still a
What? Fringe? No Lakers? Lakers, Brian?
I mean, if they get bailed out of the Russell Westbrook thing, they could be right in that mix too. Who knows? Oh
my God. If they do that, it just proves that regardless of how badly the Lakers manage themselves, there will always be a bailout. That's like the government bailing out a bank.
All right, let's go into the Gobert. From Utah's side, before we move on here, what'd you think of it for Utah?
Loved it. I mean, it was time to move on. I actually hope they trade Donovan Mitchell now because I'm way more intrigued to see, like, if they can get a similar package for Donovan Mitchell, could you imagine? They'd be the hottest young team in 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, the messaging out of Utah is that they plan to retool/rebuild around Donovan Mitchell, and now they have a ton of draft capital to do so. We'll see how serious they are because they also traded Royce O'Neal to the Brooklyn Nets.
Right. But Andy Larson, who I don't remember who he's from.
Salt Lake Tribune, I want to say.
He actually tweeted out that he wasn't entirely sure that they would build around Mitchell.
At this point, you're just delaying the inevitable.
Right.
Like, he's going to want out in a year or two. So I think they're going to like send messaging then they aren't, but they're going to be listening to offers. And
as they should.
Right. No one on that roster should be untouchable at this point.
Right.
Okay, let's go into a couple other big trades that have happened so far. This one hurts. This one just sucks. Why are we letting the Celtics get better for not that much? Right? Like the Pacers, I get it. But yeah. They traded Malcolm Brogdon to the Celtics for Daniel Tice, Aaron Nesmith, some salary filler, like Nick Stauskas, who cares? And a lottery protected 2023 first. So effectively, yeah. Nesmith in the 2023 first for Brogdon, which is like, you know, a young player and a pick. I get it. The pick's going to be crappy. It's going to be late in the first round.
Yeah.
Given Brogdon's health issues, I get it. What did you think of it from the Celtics side?
You know what I felt like. I mean, this was arguably, in terms of teams acquiring talent, and like if you factor in fit, and if you presume health, which is a big, big if here,
yeah,
this might have been the trade of the summer. Because yeah. Malcolm Brogdon slides right in for Boston and becomes like the perfect Boston addition that you could possibly imagine going into their two-way system orientation. Like, yeah. Is there a more seamless fit in the league of guards that were attainable that they could have drafted or traded for? No.
No. It was good. With all of the concern of they need a pure point guard, like Malcolm Brogdon isn't that. He's a combo guard, but you know, a potential 50-40-90 guy when healthy.
Yeah.
Can play either guard spot. So like the backcourt rotation of Brogdon, Smart, and Derek White, and then Peyton Pritchard as well is just effing perfect, like yeah. on both ends of the floor. It's great. And you've still got Tatum and Brown, you still have Horford, you have Timeboy, you have Grant Williams. That yeah. top nine, assuming health, is ready to rock both in the regular season and the playoffs. Like,
yeah.
Nesmith is not that big of a loss for you. He wasn't going to get a ton of minutes for you anyway. The pick is going to be in the late 20s. Boston right now is the title favorite, according to FanDuel. They're plus 500.
Yeah.
I think it's completely deserved.
I think so too, especially when you look at Golden State, who dropped a little bit because they lost a lot of players. By the way, don't tell their fans that, because they gave me a ton of shit for saying yeah. that this had been a rough summer. Oh, like Gary Payton wasn't essential, someone said, even though all Warriors fans, when Payton was playing well, were like, oh, this guy's fantastic. As soon as they lost, yeah. it was like, oh, whatever. What the hell was that about? Like, I don't... I'm pissing myself off right now.
They're convinced. I mean, this could be correct, right? They lost Otto Porter. They lost Gary Payton.
Yep.
You're making room in theory in the rotation for Kuminga, for Moody. They re-signed Looney, but like Wiseman is theoretically going to be back and healthy and play a role. So it's like you're yep. betting on some of your young talent to develop, and you're not, you know, your tax bill is what it is. So you can't. They could technically have re-signed everyone. Did Otto Porter sign a minimum in Toronto?
I'm actually not sure. I just saw he signed for 2 years. I've been trying to find it, but
SpotTrack has it as a minimum, but I can't imagine that's right. Or otherwise, why wouldn't he have just stayed in Golden State?
Yeah. If it's a minimum, I too would be. Yeah.
I thought that's it would a good be point. For a decent chunk of their non-tax MLE. So we'll see what the details are.
We'll figure that out. But honestly, even if you take into account like improvement for those guys, are you going to tell me that Moses Moody is going to have the same footprint on the game as Gary Payton II?
Right. I mean, even Dante DiVincenzo, who they did sign with a portion of their...
which is a good deal, by the way.
Great deal. But I mean, Gary Payton... like, Dante is going to give you more on offense than Gary Payton did. Gary Payton was a much better defender than Dante is going to be or ever has been. I mean, they have certainly... like, they are plus 650, so they are right now fourth on the board behind Boston, Milwaukee, and Phoenix. The Phoenix thing, I think, is just assuming Kevin Durant goes there, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I don't know how you're betting on Phoenix right now. Nope. But like the Warriors are, I think it really is just a bet on what their fans are expecting is a big leap from Kuminga, Moody, Wiseman's a wild card, and then you know Dante is a good pickup at the price point they got him at.
Correct. Yes.
But I hate it so much. Like, I just I absolutely hate that they have a general manager who's actually willing to trade picks for value instead of trade players for picks. Sucks. I'm happy for Utah that you're ripping off other franchises with Danny Ainge, but man, it really is unfortunate that Boston is currently the title favorite and completely deservedly so. What did you think of the deal from Indiana side, though?
I think it was time to move on. You heard all the rumblings first and foremost about Brogdon not really being a long-term fit there. You also kind of want to give Tyrese Halliburton like full reins at the guard spot. And honestly, I still think there's a player in Aaron Nesmith. And you do get like a, even though it's a lot of protected, it's going to be a late 20s pick in 2023. You do get another draft pick. It's fine. I was hoping for a little bit more, but overall, I think it's okay. Like for me, the question is, does this also open up a trade for Miles Turner, which we'll see.
Or, yeah, I mean, I think they cleared, I want to say, of 30-ish million in cap space now. So they have basically enough to sign DeAndre Ayton outright, or they could negotiate. We've talked many times about a potential Ayton-Miles Turner sign-in trade, which would seem to make sense, at least from Indiana's side. And, you know, if they have enough space to sign him outright, like you can offer, give them the offer sheet, say, take it back to Phoenix. We're willing to do a Miles Turner sign-in trade. If they don't want to do that, cool. We're going to sign you outright. Then they either have to match or not. Like the sign-in trade's off the table. They'll have to figure out something else. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. I get it from Indiana's perspective. You know, Malcolm Brogdon was at, going into last year, his current deal at $22.6 million, and they signed him to a two-year extension, so he was at $22.5 in 23-24 and 2024-25. He's frequently hurt. He's, you know, heading into his age 30 season, so just not on the timeline that they are after trading Sabonis. Like, it was time to go. Probably could have gotten better value for him had they traded him last summer, say, before they extended him and Ben Simmons was on the table, but that is neither here nor there. The other notable trade so far, the Kings sent Justin Holiday, Mo Harkless, and a lotto protected 2024 first to Atlanta for Kevin Huerter. What do you think of that deal for the Kings?
For the Kings, I think it's fine. I especially like the fact that they lotto protected the 2024 pick.
Because it's the Kings.
It's the Kings. It's right. Exactly. Like, I'm not a big fan of Kevin Huerter. I think he's fine. I think defensively he's pretty hot or cold. Offensively, there doesn't seem to be a lot of additional potential. That said, I also, when the trade went down, when I was kind of a little bit iffy about it, I started thinking, well, maybe Trae Young's heliocentric playing style kept his numbers back a little bit. So I have decided to open the door in my own head for Kevin Huerter to become a better player than I have determined him to be.
That's interesting.
I'm opening that possibility now. I just think he's been very unimpressive in Atlanta, honestly. I just don't think that he's been exceptional at all, and I've been kind of weirded out by some Hawks fans who were like all in on him and just like, yeah, this is our starting two guard for the future. Like, I just didn't see it, and apparently the Hawks didn't either because he's gone. That actually has to be taken into consideration here. But with the Kings and having a point guard like De'Aaron Fox who isn't as heliocentric as Trae Young, maybe there's a chance for him to actually become a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Simmons tweeted this out and,
oh, like, God, never start a sentence with that.
I know. But he tweeted out the Kings' new top eight because they also signed Malik Monk. I think it was 2 years, 18 or 19 million. 19 million. So now their top eight is Fox, Davion Mitchell, Monk, Huerter, still have Harrison Barnes, Sabonis, still have Rashawn Holmes, and I'm blanking on the eighth. But like, regardless, that is an intriguing top end rotation.
Keegan Murray, probably, right?
Oh, right, Keegan Murray. Yes. Yeah. But so yeah, like that's an intriguing top eight. Their depth sucks after that, but like they might not be. They'll be in the play-in mix at least, I think.
Yeah, and look, remember who wasn't all that negative about the trade at the trade deadline on their behalf?
Yeah.
And remember who also loved the drafting of Keegan Murray?
Mm-hmm.
This guy. I'm telling you, people were so harsh on the Kings for, you know, being the Kings. I think we need to do better in terms of judging trades on their own and also reading like the collectivity of it, Like, we can't sit back anymore and go, well, this trade is automatically going to suck because Kings. Like, and I was part of that. I did that for a while, too, until I started realizing this is actually pretty dumb. Like, a draft pick isn't going to hit or miss because Kings, like, necessarily. I don't think it works like that. Sure, they might disappoint, but a lot of teams might disappoint. Like, the Minnesota Timberwolves just gave up everything. They might also be disappointing. Like, are there concerns with ownership? Yes. Do I think that the Sacramento Kings deserve a new owner? Yes. Absolutely. Do I think they'll ever win a championship under Vivek Ranadive? No. Like, that much I'll go. I'll go that far, at least. Yeah. But this was a good summer for him.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can make the case that, you know, like, how much did this raise their ceiling? Like, me saying they're in the play-in mix is progress for the Kings, but, like, they're still, let's see, on FanDuel. They are, wow, I had to scroll very far. They are a plus 49,000 to win the title. The Washington Wizards are a plus 15,000 to give you some perspective. They are the next closest team. So odds makers at least still have no faith in the Kings doing anything of actual note. Like, they'll be fun to watch. I'll put them actually somewhat high on my league pass rankings, I think, which I would typically the Kings? Not say. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. We just have breaking, and Zion Williamson has agreed to the new 5-year designated maximum rookie extension.
Well, that is a perfect place to seg, Mort, because we have gone 30 minutes now. I have not talked about the biggest news that's come out over the past couple days.
Right.
So Kyrie Irving picks up his player option on Monday. Mm-hmm. And we think, okay, all is well in Brooklyn, at least for this season. We'll figure it out in 2023. Although in our last episode, we hinted, like, just because he picked it up did not mean all is well. 2 hours before free agency started, 3 hours, somewhere along those lines.
Very close to it, yes.
I think Shams was the first one to report.
Dude, I don't know. I have completely given up on remembering whether it was Vogue or Shams on stuff. Let's just say Adrian Sharania.
I was driving into Chicago at that point and get the push notification that Kevin Durant has officially requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. This has been hanging over free agency and hanging over the trade market. Like, it's honestly incredible that the Timberwolves pulled off that deal for Gobert before Kevin Durant got traded, because it felt like a lot of the trade action, at least, has just come to a screeching halt as teams are holding out hope that, I mean, Kevin Durant signed for 4 more years and he's Kevin freaking Durant. Like, if you have any chance of getting him, you go all in.
Right.
Do you have a favorite destination for him, or like a favorite realistic trade for him?
No, I don't care.
It's not Kyrie, man. It's Kevin Durant.
Yeah, it's not that. It's, look, this is all just, it's the constant player movement. And it's the constant, like, I want to switch teams because things aren't going my way to the best of my own expectations thing. You want to get out of an organization because they were what towards your best friend? What were they?
Reasonable.
Right? I don't care. Like, if he's 34... He's still one of the best players in the NBA. I'm not saying that otherwise. He's fantastic. He's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't played a ton in the past 2 years after the Achilles injury. He's looked tremendous at when he's played, but he's been out for a while here and there. Again, 34. What kind of deal out there puts him into immediate contention? Like, he couldn't get it done. He couldn't make it happen in Brooklyn for reasons outside of his own control, admittedly.
Sure.
But, like, the haul that the Nets are going to expect, it's going to limit the amount of players and amount of talent that he can play alongside when he gets there. So, like, what's the deal? If he goes to Phoenix, for example, mm-hmm. like, what are they going to have to give up? They're going to have to give up Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, and stuff, right? Possibly even more than that.
Right. And, I mean, Phoenix in particular, it's, again, please don't try to figure this stuff out because it is so boring. But the Nets are hard-capped. Ayton has a base year compensation issue. Yep. So constructing a two-team trade with the two of them is very, very difficult.
Correct.
You can maybe do a three-team deal where Ayton goes somewhere else. And I don't care. I'm not putting enough brain power in to think about it right now. But that
But like, even if you have to trade Ayton and Bridges, right?
Yeah.
You're shortening your depth. You probably also have to include Cameron Johnson, I would imagine. Right.
So, yeah. So you've got CP, you've got Book, you've got Jay Crowder.
And KD.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. They re-signed Bismack. So,
okay. There you go. But like, JaVale McGee is now in Dallas.
Right.
So maybe Hassan Whiteside can.
Great. Hang out. That's right? Nice.
Or Dwight Howard.
I don't trust that team at all.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, to me, Toronto is the one that seems like they can put together a reasonable offer and still have enough left after the fact.
Okay, will Brooklyn accept a reasonable offer, or are they looking at the Gobert trade and going, nope, right. We want that?
Right. That's the problem, the Gobert trade. I mean, also, like, Drew Holiday trade in the past, like,
right.
Kevin Durant, with 4 years left on his contract, like, they have to basically revoke the Stepien rule to give Brooklyn fair value.
Yes.
In a trade for Kevin Durant. The other consideration is that they gave up all of their draft picks for James Harden. So it's not like...
Which worked out fantastically, by the way.
Right. So, you know, do you want to rebuild? Probably not. Like, you probably want to be at least some semblance of competitive, because I think all of those picks are fully unprotected and you don't want to give Brooklyn, like, if you're trading Kevin Durant for, you know, the Gobert package is basically like a ton of picks and then some guys who you're probably going to flip later. You can't necessarily do that if you're Brooklyn, because what, your end game is rebuilding around Ben Simmons if he decides to play basketball this year? Like, you're going to send a top five pick to Houston potentially next year.
So I think it's time that I get some roses.
Yeah. Yeah. You, when KD and Kyrie signed there in 2019, you know, I said you bet on the talent and you said, sure. But especially with Kyrie, the way he, you know, walked out as the Joker blowing up the hospital in Boston, and even with LeBron in Cleveland, you know, he has admitted he was immature at the time, but forced his way out of there. And then KD, despite being with the Warriors and in this perfect situation to just rack up rings and rings and rings, was unhappy there. You know, they have since admitted, Sean Marks has basically come out and said, like, we gave up our culture to sign these two guys. And,
yep.
You know, you couldn't predict them getting hurt in the 2021 playoffs.
Right,
you couldn't predict a pandemic, you know, affecting Kyrie's availability to the extent that it did. But this is, you know, this is what happens. You can't predict everything that's going to come up. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to you for at least highlighting the downside of what otherwise seemed like a complete layup at the time.
This has to be the most botched superstar team of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they won one playoff series together. Team that started last season with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden is now facing the very real possibility of having to rebuild around Ben Simmons.
Right.
Which is just every time I say it, I can't say it without a smile on my face.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. It is a complete and utter disaster for Brooklyn. And that is why they are going to ask for the absolute moon for Kevin Durant. Yep. And if they trade him, they're going to trade Kyrie. Like, they could replenish, you know, if they hypothetically, let's say they do trade Kyrie to the Lakers for Westbrook, the 2027 and 2029 first. I don't know if they can loop Taylor Hurt and Tucker into this deal or not, cap wise. You know, Toronto, again, like, you can have some combination of Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, Gary Trent. Toronto is still left with whoever doesn't go in that trade, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, Chris Boucher. Now, they've got some interesting depth there, even with what they give up. And I think they have all of their picks to offer. They have every single one of their first-round picks to offer. So give the next four firsts, give three pick swaps. Like, you can do it.
And then we're right back to where they started.
Toronto or Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Like, they were rebuilding. After that Boston trade, they had nothing. They were scrapping for survival.
Yep.
And then things started going their way, and then they cashed in, and they're right back to where they were like 7 years ago. So I don't know if this story actually happened. It's just one that I heard many years ago. Apparently, at some point in time in the U.S., there was a homeless person who got given a scratcher and won like $10,000. Mm-hmm. And he just completely blew it, like, on all kinds of junk within the first 6 months, and he was right back on the street. Sure. After that. So, like, he had 6 months of gloriness, and then he was back to where he started. I can't get that story out of my head when I think of the Brooklyn Nets.
I understand why they made the gamble when they did.
Sure.
Right? Like, LeVert, Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, D'Angelo Russell, like, fun team, young team, not going to win a championship with that.
Totally agree, but they weren't done. Like, here's the thing. You were making that argument. I've seen myriad of people make that argument. Here's what I think is lost in that. Sean Marks wasn't finished. He had done an amazing job. Yes. Like, are we going to sit here and say, well, he was going to lock himself into that, or was he going to pull another rabbit out of the hat? Like, he could have swung some of those guys for higher draft picks. He could have done something, like, if someone was available who wasn't necessarily, you know, Kyrie Irving. And again, Kevin Durant was coming off the Achilles tear. I still think that matters. My apologies. Yeah. I know people out there are still, Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. I know he was still risky. And in fairness, I'm just looking it up now so I get the proper count here. He played a grand total in 3 years with the organization of 90 games with the Brooklyn Nets in the regular season. 90.
Shortened seasons for two of them, to be fair.
Sure, but still 90.
Right.
Still 90.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's just not good enough. Like, I just don't believe that Sean Marks was done. I don't think he sat there, looked at D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, went, all right, well, we're done. Let's go win a championship. I don't think that. And if the plan was to get KD and Kyrie, fine. But here's the thing, though. When was that duo ever going to properly function? When were you ever going to anticipate getting Kyrie into that organization without stuff happening? And if you knew at the time that KD was like, no, I want Kyrie, that's my guy, then you also knew that he would stand by his guys, because NBA players, for the most part, are loyal to each other, and they are friends. So you kind of knew, you could almost see it coming from a mile away.
Yeah, and I think Nets fans would rightfully counter that.
Right.
Harden got hurt, Kyrie got hurt in that Brooklyn
and
the Milwaukee series, and they were still one shoe size away from going to the conference finals.
And that is completely valid. And I think that is important to note as well. The injuries did affect them. That was unfortunate. And look, we can sit here and play what if all day long. And I'm frankly, I agree with that what if scenario. That one big ass toe. I mean, it's going to haunt the dreams of Nets fans everywhere. I'm not saying otherwise. That said, that culture, it was eliminated. I wouldn't even have been shocked. Even if they'd made it to the finals, I would not have been shocked to see them not win it.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, that's the risk of going all in on top end talent. You typically deplete a lot of your depth. And if one of those guys gets hurt, that, you know, you have to bank on the other two being good enough. Or in that in Brooklyn's case, you know, both of those guys got hurt. You have to bank on Kevin Durant being good enough, which he damn near was. But yeah, this is a complete and total mess. Here's the question that I've seen kind of floating around. Kevin Durant's under contract for 4 more years. Mm-hmm. They don't have to trade him in theory.
No, they don't.
If you're the Nets, are you just like, screw you? You're under contract. Come play. Like, just, I'm not trading you.
So the thing about that is, and it's funny you bring that up because we had a segment on that on my Danish radio show here on Friday, actually, because we were discussing that particular thing. And it really it really connects to player empowerment, right? At the end of the day, it comes down to, if you don't do what the superstar wants you to do, you are going to get a bad reputation. But the Nets here, like, should they get a bad reputation if they just hang on to the player that they signed? I don't necessarily think they should get a bad reputation off of that. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, whether they should keep him or not, but they would be well within their rights. I mean, if the Nets become this sort of team that finally says, no, we're putting our foot down on everything. Like, we're putting our foot down on bad behavior. We're putting our foot down on superstars demanding out with 4 years left on their contracts. I will give them that. I will applaud that, because while I do support player empowerment, I think this is going too far, where you can just sign a contract and say, well, I'm not going to honor it. Screw you. I want out. Trade me. And hey, by the way, trade me to this desired list of places. No, man, F that. You're an NBA organization that needs to do what's best for you. I mean, if you can have a sit down where you say, look, Kevin, we also need to get something out of this. If you and I, we come to some sort of agreement, cool. That would be the best outcome. But if players come in and say, no, I want this, this, and that, and there's no in between, I would be fine if an NBA team said, yeah, no, you know what? No, not gonna happen. We're just gonna keep you. All right, guy?
The counterpoint being, just look at what happened with his teammate, who also had 4 years left on his contract, and then shows up in October and says, I'm not mentally ready to play.
Fine. Then let him do that. Honestly, I don't care. If you are going to be that much of a problem, not Ben Simmons, because honestly, I'm not going to go into the whole
right.
You know, the emotional thing, because I don't live in Ben Simmons. I don't live in Kevin Durant. If people are saying they're depressed, I have no reason to not believe them. But my point is this: if a guy is doing everything within his power not to play, let him. Do you think Kevin Durant?
The hell out of him.
Yeah, sure. But also, look, he's 34. Sure. I would call his bluff. You really think that he's going to sit out for the next 4 years, basically retiring?
Yeah. Right.
I'm just going to say, okay, you go ahead. It's fine. And then when you're ready to rejoin the team, you have an open spot. That's cool.
I just want to encourage everyone to really enjoy this upcoming season and brace yourself for a very long lockout afterward.
Yeah.
Because, man, this is, you know, if a star like Kevin Durant with 4 years left on his contract can effectively get his wish of choose his next destination, and it isn't the best package that's offered to that team, or, you know, if this does drag out for months, and he does say, you know, I'm not going to play for you guys. Like,
right.
Owners are just never going to let this happen again. I continue to say the Ben Simmons arbitration hearing, whenever it happens, is going to be the single biggest story of the offseason.
Yes.
If he does get his money back, it's going to set the template for all of these guys. And this, you know.
Oh, Ben, NBA owners are going to freak.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is the thing I'm more focused on. Like, where Kevin Durant goes is fascinating, and we can talk about trade scenarios all we want. I'm concerned with the bigger picture of, like, is this going to be a trend? And if so, if Ben wins the arbitration hearing, if KD decides, you know, I'm opting out, or I'm not going to play, basically, until you trade me, owners are just never going to let this happen again. Like, this will be the last season this can ever happen. I don't know what the penalty is going to be. They'll add years to the contract or something like that. Like, they're just never, ever, ever going to let this happen again.
Which is funny, because that was always the focus on the prior in the prior CBA negotiations, was to shorten contracts as to save owners from themselves. And now they suddenly realized, oh, we made them too short. Damn it. Yep. Damn it. Yep. Yep. And by the way, just so people don't think that I'm putting everything at the feet of Kyrie and KD, like, the Nets willingly went into this. The Nets willingly said, hey, let's do this, and ignore everything. They also, at the start of the season, said, no, we are not going to accept Kyrie Irving as a part-time player. And then their backbone turned into mashed potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Now that we are 50 minutes here, let's talk about actual free agency, because trades have taken up the this big focus for the past couple days. But, you know, a lot of guys have found new teams or signed gigantic new contracts with their current teams. So a ton of max extensions have been handed out, none of which are hugely surprising. But Bradley Beal takes the 251, 5-year 251 to stay with the Wizards.
Stay with the Wizards. Like, he took it so he can ask out in a year, right? Which, again, goes back to our conversation from before.
Right. Yeah, well, hopefully, if he's smart, he's going to ask out by the trade deadline, because who knows if he's going to be able to do that after the new CBA.
By the way, I'm partially kidding. I actually do think that Bradley Beal has very good intentions. Like, if the Wizards surrounded him with quality, he would instantaneously be locked in. Let's go Washington. Let's go get this. Like, he would buy in. I think he's a very, very good dude. My comment was like 80% joking. I'm just opening the door for those remaining 20%, because it's not that I don't trust Bradley Beal. I just don't trust the Wizards.
Well, and the Wizards have had a good summer other than that.
They KCP have.
KCP for Ish Smith for Monte Morris and Will Barton. They got DeLon Wright on a two-year $16 million deal to round out. I mean, now you've got effectively Barton, Beal, Wright, and if you slide Barton down to the two, that can be your core backcourt rotation. Or they got the kid from Wisconsin, Johnny Davis.
So right.
They've got a million forwards still. Rui, Denny, Kispert, Barton, if you play him at the three, Kuzma. You got Gafford and Porzingis at center slash big. Like, they've got an interesting rotation. I'm not going to say they're going to win a title this year or anything, but they'll be contending for a play-in spot, at least. So they're moving in the right direction. I think Beal took the money, and we'll figure out the rest later, I think, is a fair assessment of what happened with that contract. Zach LaVine took a little while. It did not happen right away, but did end up taking the 5-year, I believe it was $215 million max extension with a 5th-year player option for the Bulls. Again, no huge surprise there, but good to see that the Bulls were not. I mean, there was some speculation that, like, maybe they were not willing to offer him the max. I'm guessing that the player option in the 5th year was the hang up, if anything.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I think that's fine, because by that time he's going to be 31. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying his game is no longer reliant on athleticism. Like, some of it is, but it's a very small percentage compared to what it was when he first entered the league. Like, he's become a very smart player. But at the same time, like, going into your, what, oh my God, what's that? he's in his eighth year now, right? Or entering his ninth. Not even sure.
Levine.
He's entering his ninth.
Yeah,
he's entering his ninth year. Like, in 4 years' time, he would have been a 13-year pro, right? So
yeah,
if he declines that and he goes somewhere else for on like Damian Lillard money, okay. So I think like the I don't mind the player option.
Yeah, no, that is a concession you make 10 times out of 10 when the alternative is potentially losing him. Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, Ja Morant, Darius Garland, Zion Williamson all agreed to max or supermax extensions.
Yep.
With their respective teams. The Zion one, as you mentioned, just broke a little bit ago. Andrew Lopez of ESPN is reporting he is fully guaranteed the $193 million. And if he makes the All-NBA team, wins MVP or DPOY, it triggers the Supermax escalator clauses that could...
Well, he won't win DPOY. That I guarantee.
Yeah. So if he makes the All-NBA team, it goes up to $231 million. But that was a potential sticking point, fully guaranteed or not. Based on this reporting, it looks like the Pelicans fully guaranteed this thing.
Yeah, I mean... Okay, good for Zion.
Sure. Well, I mean, I saw a friend of the podcast, Shamit Dua, has made this point already, but, you know, with the KD stuff, I think the Pelicans could have put together a compelling offer for KD, including Zion. Maybe you do Brandon Ingram and a ton of picks, but you also could have done Zion and salary matching and a ton of picks, which they still have from a couple other teams. So now you can basically tell Zion, like, we picked you over Kevin Durant. Like, if there is any question about our loyalty to you, between giving you fully guaranteeing this thing, even though you've only played, you know, barely more than one regular season's worth of games, and we are willing to commit to you over Kevin Durant, like, there is no question where you stand in our eyes. Like, let's return the favor here, buddy.
Yeah, I was about to say that's never been the issue.
Right.
Like that has never been the biggest question. Like if the New Orleans Pelicans are devoted to Zion Williams, it's the other way around entirely. Right. So I mean, for me, this is like the litmus test of what we were talking about earlier of a guy signing a contract and then wanting out afterwards. Because Zion, for a long time, and don't get me wrong, I don't think it's on him when his family comes out and says stuff. I don't think that should be on a player. If a family member comes out and speaks to a source and says some wild stuff, that's not on the player. But Zion didn't really go out and try to put out those fires at all. And that is where I was like, hold up, what's happening right now? If he asks for a trade in like a year... Oh, I'm so out on that experience.
Again, if he asks for a trade, that means poison pilled this year, so it just basically cannot happen.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true. So next year again. Right.
And at that point, there's going to be a new CBA, and the owners are just never going to allow these guys. I don't know. Maybe they won't, but or maybe there's no real workaround to this, but I'm sure that is front of mind heading into these CBA talks is like, you know, if guys sign these massive contracts, how do we make sure that they are not able to demand trades
right
a year into it? Or like in Zion's case, if he did it next year, right as this 5-year extension begins. And maybe it's a flaw with the Supermax system itself, or maybe if you give someone this type of contract, the team gets a no trade clause for a couple of years. I don't know what the solution is.
That's what I was thinking. I think we're on the same, but that's exactly what I was thinking. Like for the first 2 years of a rookie extension, like maybe the first year, the player is simply not allowed to be traded. And then in year two, something has to, like both teams has to agree, but like both player and teams would have to agree to waive certain things. I don't know, but I do think that could be an avenue that could be interesting.
Yeah. Like, I just don't know what the solution is or if there is a way to fully prevent this type of player movement. And frankly, I don't know. The NBA should care because it's long-term, it's bad for fan interest.
Right. If
your team, like Nets fans right now, are just in the absolute darkest timeline, right? Like they were living so high a year ago. They're like, we have KD and James Harden, Kyrie. We're the title favorites. We feel great. And now they're like just talking themselves into, we don't have
Simmons
to
might be okay.
Yeah, right, right. Like, oh, man. So, yeah, like you want to, when your team gets a star like that, ideally, you would like the team to be able to keep said star and make said star happy. And like,
right,
you know, like fans are going to buy the jersey of that player and like get emotionally connected to that player over years and years and years, instead of like, oh, all of these guys are just mercenaries going from team to team every 2 to 3 years and we can establish no sort of connection. So, again, I don't know what the answer is here, but it's certainly, I think, going to be a major point of contention in the next CBA, and right. KD will be, Ben Simmons will be, AD will be, and you know, Zion, if that ever came to pass, would be as well. But I think maybe that was the Pelicans' way. Like, we had a feeling that Zion probably would be reluctant to sign anything that wasn't fully guaranteed. So maybe the Pelicans were just like, look, we could either play hardball with this guy and try to, you know, give ourselves some injury protections in years 4 and 5 and piss him off and make him more likely to demand a trade down the line. Or we're just going to bite the bullet and say, like, this guy is a transcendent talent. If he stays healthy, this is a bet worth making. We feel good about our core moving forward, so we're going to fully guarantee this thing and, you know, try to build the loyalty that maybe, you know, we have been giving since we drafted him, but it has not necessarily been reciprocated from his camp.
Yeah.
Jalen Brunson, to absolutely no one's surprise, is going to the New York Knicks. 4 years, $104 million. We talked about this last episode because it was the worst kept secret in the NBA, but now that you've seen the final terms, what do you think of that deal?
Tampering.
Dude, if they are going to enforce tampering, there's not going to be a second round this year. It's just going to be a one-round draft. Because how many guys came out in the first, like, 5 minutes of free agency?
Yeah, Shams had everything locked and loaded. Did you notice?
Well, what was weird is that he reported, like, Book and Cat right away. And then Woj waited until midnight, which was the actual time you could technically start negotiating those extensions, which I found very funny.
So seriously, what I think, I'm not underwhelmed, I'm not overwhelmed, I'm just whelmed.
Sure, yeah,
he's fine.
The Knicks they broke the curse. They had, you know, they hadn't the Charlie Ward curse, I believe it was called, where they had re-signed someone for like almost 30 years. Mitchell Robinson is going back on a 4-year, $60 million deal. They also got Isaiah Hartenstein, 2 years, $16 million.
Can I just say I am very impressed with how innovative the Knicks are, because they paid their backup center $15 million a year and their starting center $8 million a year.
Yep. It's a lot for Mitch Rob. I'll say that much. The cap's going to explode, so I don't really care. And we don't know. As we discuss these deals from here on out, these are all reported terms. We have not seen the official terms. You can't become official until July 6th.
Right. Keith Smith is going to update the ever-living shit out of this on Twitter when things become official. Absolutely.
And it is worth noting that agents often puff these contracts up. So they'll often say it's a 4-year, $84 million deal, and it winds up being like a 4-year, $75 million with, you know, unlikely incentives to get to 84. So
correct.
Brunson might not actually be $104 million. None of the contracts that
Jalen Brunson's going to be like 4 years, 80. And then
right.
The $24 million are going to be like unlikely incentives.
We also, I mean, maybe it's a descending contract instead of ascending. Yeah. We don't know the terms of anything. So with regard to Mitchell Robinson, like, $15 million is, you know, the going price, I guess, for a starting center. Yusuf Nurkic got $70 million. for 4 years to re-sign with the Blazers. So I get it from that perspective. This still feels like the Knicks are just treading water and they're like trying to line up for a superstar trade that's never going to happen, but we'll see. In the meantime, enjoy the 12 seed.
If Mitchell Robinson has any incentives in his contract, right, I think it would be absolutely freaking hilarious if one of those things, like in the first year, is you get like a $200,000 trigger if you make a shot from beyond 15 feet.
Right, you make a single three-pointer.
Yeah. No, but seriously, like...
Yeah, he has made zero. He has made zero career three-pointers.
It's not just the threes, Brian. It's not just... His average shot distance this year was 1.2 feet.
I'm now looking. Wow. He did not attempt a single shot.
From beyond 10 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow.
That's what I'm saying. Like, a 15-footer. Like, look, Mitchell, just hit one, baby.
Right.
Just hit one.
Well, on the bright side, they got him a point guard. So now you have someone to play pick and roll with. Because that...
Yeah,
that
right?
That is the archetype that he... Like, he's not going to create shots on his own. He's not going to hit any outside shots whatsoever. But he's going to set hard screens. He's going to rebound. He's going to block shots. So maybe him and Brunson hit it off and, like, we have a career Mitchell Robinson year. But, yeah, I liked the Hartenstein pickup for them.
Loved it. Loved it. Great value. Like, how on earth... Like, I'm honestly a little bit pissed at the Bulls for not offering like the full non-tax simile for Hartenstein or Mo Bamba for that matter, because like, how do you not offer that for Hartenstein when he had that good of a year that he did? I think his market, it was grotesquely underrated last year. He was on the open market for way too long. Mm-hmm. This year, it seems like his market was underappreciated. He just turned 24 years old. He can shoot. He can pass. He can rebound the fuck out of that basketball. He's a high percentage player. He blocks shots. He plays defense. Like, why? Why was he not more interesting to teams? I will not understand this.
Well, I can't believe Mo Bamba, especially after the Magic declined his qualifying offer.
Yes!
Getting him back at 2 years, $21 million is absolutely unbelievable to me.
Yeah, why would he? That's like, I don't understand why he would be interested in that.
Right, because you know you're going to be behind Paolo and Wendell Carter, so you're at best you're going to be a backup center unless one of those guys gets hurt.
Right, I mean, Paolo to me is like a four, but
right.
So yeah,
but, like, and you then, could slide Wendell to the four, I guess.
Yeah, here and there, like maybe they do. All right, so here's the thing: maybe Orlando does the same with their primary big man rotation as they do with their guards. Like, they are running a three guard setup with Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony, and Markelle Fultz. Like, those are three guards who can all play both guard spots. So, like, under, like, if you average it out, it's 32 minutes per game for each, right? If you only play three guards. With maybe you play like a three big rotation of Wendell, Paolo, and Bamba, but like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like I'm forgetting someone in
Jonathan
that big
Isaac.
Man. Right. No, well, maybe. Yeah, maybe you just go Franz Wagner and Jonathan Isaac at the three.
Yeah.
But you can't. Like, you also. What about Gary Harris?
Right. Who they also brought.
He's also there.
Yeah. I don't get what the hell the Magic are doing. I'll be honest.
No, it seems odd, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Bamba on that contract should be pretty good value trade-wise, too. And frankly, even Gary Harris might have some pretty good trade value.
Yeah.
I feel like the Magic do this every time while they're rebuilding. They're like, we're just going to tread water here. And I mean, hell, to their credit, they got, you know, they got the number one pick. They got Paolo. Right. So maybe they're able to do so, because like Gary Harris at 2 years, $26 million, like that is a good matching salary, if nothing else, when you're trying to trade for stuff. And like, you know, maybe they're just lining up for a consolidation trade,
which might be there, which might not, because we talked like Here's the thing. The Hawks were in need of that for a long time. And look what right. they're doing now. They're trading off pieces.
Right. And the Knicks, too. We brought up
the Knicks, like, too. Right.
They signed all these guys to contracts that we thought, okay,
yeah,
consolidation trades there. You're ready to go. Because, like, the Magic could include Jonathan Isaac, who is now on a very non-guaranteed contract, Markel right. Fultz, Gary Harris, Terrence Ross, Mo Bamba, Jalen
Terrence Suggs, Ross, Chuma Okeke, for crying out loud. We forgot yeah. a lot of these guys. RJ Hampton is there, too.
Right. They got a ton of stuff to offer, but I just don't know how much value any of their individual pieces outside of Paolo have. So maybe you're just betting on draft picks at that point. And like you just have a ton of matching salary. I don't know.
All I know is if you're going to like list keepers long-term, you got to go Paolo, Wendell, Cole Anthony, and Franz Wagner. Like you have those mm-hmm. four.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is like up for grabs. And when I say that with the caveat that Jalen Suggs might be better in the second year, but he was awful.
Just yeah. and awful. Wendell is on a declining contract. So like he is, even yeah, if you they aren't love a believer. Him. Yeah. But even if you aren't a believer in him, like he's going to be earning $10.9 million in 2025-26 when the cap is probably going to be $170 million. Like he's going to be earning bench yeah. player money as a starting center in his potential prime at that point.
Yeah, like he is so good. And by the way, that's going to make it harder for them to extend him unless they fix that problem
right.
in the CBA because
yes.
they can only offer him 120% of that contract. 120% of $10.9 million. Wendell is going to go, F you, buddy. No, right. I'm not going to take that.
Right, right. That is going to be a big problem for a lot of teams, frankly, in the coming years.
Yep.
Lou Dort, 5 years, $87.5 million back to OKC.
Get the bag, Lou. Get the bag.
What did you think of that deal?
Love it. Love it. I mean, he's been flying under the radar for so long, right? Like he developed into a 17-point scorer, became better shooter. Remember when people just would leave him alone on the perimeter and he would brick everything? And
yeah,
people were basically calling him the second coming of Tony Allen, like someone who would never be able to score the ball. He would only be a defender and nothing else. Dude was at 17 points per game, 17.2 for being exact. He hit 2.5 3-pointers per game. He took 7.7 and he did it at 33.2%. Like, granted that it's not 40%, it's not where, you know, he's a high efficiency 3-point shooter, mm-hmm. but the volume, the fact that he could get it up to that point and not completely fall through, that he is yeah. an average 3-point shooter, it opens up everything. I love this deal.
Yeah. I mean, good switchable defender. You know, came like rose onto the national consciousness a couple years ago when he was guarding Harden in the playoffs, which
right.
in retrospect might say more about Harden than it does about Dort. but no, I mean, he is a, if he can get that 3-pointer up to the high 30s,
yeah.
that's even better. But the progress he's shown over the first couple of years is certainly encouraging in that regard. And
right.
yeah, I mean, OKC, like their cap space expired June 30th. So they're over the cap already. You know, they turned down, I think it was a smart piece of business for them to turn down his team option, make him a restricted free agent when no one had any money. So like he wasn't getting a better deal elsewhere.
Yeah.
And again, like we say this a lot, but that's going to be 87.5 is going to be what, like 17.5 a year. Mm-hmm. I did my math correctly. Nice matchable salary in case yep. they ever want to do a consolidation trade and they have every draft pick under the sun for the next 5 to 6 years. So like
correct.
You know, they want to get I don't think they're going to go after Kevin Durant. I don't know if that reunion's in the cards, but
oh, I would very much doubt it.
Right. But Kevin Durant won't be the last superstar to ask for a trade in the next couple of years. So
correct. At some point, Zion Williamson might be saying, nope, not yep. anymore. I want the Knicks. And then he ends up in OKC.
The big market team of Oklahoma City. What about what the Blazers are doing? We brought up Nurkic already, 4 years, $70 million. Anthony Simons, 4 years, $100 million. And Gary Payton the second.
Yeah.
3 years, $28 million.
Uh-huh. I like
it. Given what the Blazers have done over the course of the full offseason, so they trade for Jeremy Grant, they get Shaedon Sharpe at number seven, they get all, you know, Simons and Nurkic back, neither of which are a surprise, bring in Gary Payton. I'm assuming that is most of their non-taxpayer mid-level. So they are probably pretty done here. Do you think they've done enough to reload around Dame?
No. I like, honestly, I realize that sounds dumb when I say I like it, but that's because my expectations to them were so very, very low that for me to see how they recouped some stuff was positive. I thought they completely bungled the trade deadline. I did not like the way that they handled those things. But I mean, it's fine. Like, Anthony Simons to me was a major priority. You're getting him for $25 million a year, which I think is a good deal. You get Yusuf Nurkic back. That kind of surprised me because there were rumblings that he wouldn't stay, and now he did, which is good because he's a hell of a center. Gary Payton is going to help them defensively. The hang-up for me remains Shaedon Sharpe. I can't imagine they think he's ready yet. I can't imagine. So what's, like, I'm not asking, like, what's the point of Shaedon Sharpe? Because obviously I know what the point is, but for that specific roster, what's the point?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question.
I mean, I just don't know.
Who knows what offers were on the table for that seven pick during the draft, or maybe it was just a bet. You know what?
Right.
Similar to what Sam Hinkie allegedly did all those years ago, which you're looking for. Like, we'll just take the best player available or the guy with the highest upside, and we will expect that we could trade him later. Mm-hmm. But as we have seen time and again, as soon as you make the pick loses half of its value now that it is an actual player. And you're right. If we don't see a ton of Shaedon Sharpe this year, if he struggles early on in his career, that pick's going to lose a lot more value. Like, Aaron Nesmith was a lottery pick recently, and you know, they get an oft-injured Malcolm Brogdon for him.
Right.
So I'm with you in thinking, like, all right, the Blazers are playing team, playing potential team.
Right.
Let's see where they are odds-wise. Ooh, they're above the Kings at least. They are tied with, wow.
Uh-huh. What?
They are tied with the Utah Jazz, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Charlotte Hornets, and the New York Knicks at plus 12,000. And I am just begging to know how the Cleveland Cavaliers are that low and tied with the rest of that.
Yeah.
That
seems like the classic underrating of Cleveland, though, right?
Sure. Yeah, because I can buy the other four teams being in that tier, but Cleveland being that low that's interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of other signings have happened. We're not going to touch on every single one here because there are just too many to recap. What have been some of your other favorite ones, though?
You actually have it on the email that you sent me. So Bruce Brown to the Nuggets, I love it. Because you and I were talking about, like, where do you find a proper fit for Bruce Brown? Because he's so system-dependent. And, like, we were kind of trying to wrap our heads around it. And then when he signed with the Nuggets, like, that's the answer. Like, that's Denver. Yes. Yeah. That's right there. That's a tremendous fit. Yeah, absolutely. Like, the cutting, the opportunistic scoring patterns, like the defense, if that shot is real too, oh my God. Love it. Love the Bruce Brown signing there. Just
him,
formidable.
Him on the short roll in particular.
Yes.
Playing off of Murray or Jokic. Or Gordon, tremendous. Frankly. I mean, frankly, you know, they signed DeAndre Jordan, which was my favorite signing of the summer. Now I don't have to watch DeAndre Jordan. Someone said, I think this is my friend Joey. So shout out to Joey P. They said that they signed DeAndre Jordan to keep Jokic's plus minus as elite as possible. It might not be wrong.
It's not wrong. Yeah, right. That is completely valid, honestly. Yeah. Wow.
Right. I enjoyed that. But like, frankly, I'd rather see them just use Bruce Brown as their small ball five instead of DeAndre Jordan play a single minute for them. But yeah, I love the value. Getting him at below the non-tax MLE was incredible. I thought he was a surefire tax MLE guy. What'd you think of Lonnie Walker to the Lakers? Full tax MLE for Lonnie Walker.
Well, 1 year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that was fine. Like, you know, I'm not the biggest Lonnie Walker fan, but for that contract, yeah. Like, that's perfectly reasonable. I thought that if he were to stick around the Spurs or go elsewhere, he would probably be looking at around 12, 13 million a year. And to me, which would have been steep. So for him to go at 6.5, that was below what I thought, and it's also below what I think he's worth. So for the Lakers, that's a good bit of business. They generally have done well this summer, I think, which is something you don't really say all that much about the Lakers. Damian Jones as well. Yeah, no, I think that's a good deal.
I don't get it. Uh-oh. I'll be honest. I don't.
In terms of what?
Does Lonnie Walker solve anything for them?
No, but Malik Monk left.
Right.
They needed a replacement.
Right. But like,
what? What are you thinking?
I'm just thinking that's their big swing. They had the taxpayer mid-level and they had nothing else. They have to rely on minimum contracts to fill out their roster. And like, I think Eric Pincus or someone tweeted out their full roster the other day. I was like, that still sucks. Like, outside of LeBron and AD, that's still not a good team.
Yes, but what, okay, so what kind of alternatives were out there though?
That's a fair question. And I mean, I don't know what TJ Warren is going to end up signing for, or if he is going to end up taking a minimum deal.
Right.
Let's see who went for below a 6.5 million AAV that I would prefer over Lonnie Walker.
And remember though, they needed some youth.
Sure. I would probably rather have Dante DiVincenzo.
All right, I'll buy that one. Yeah,
that's Amir true. Coffee?
Amir Coffee signed one hell of a deal. What? I mean, not for him.
It's the steal of free agency.
Yeah.
3 years, it might million, be. Going back it to might the Clippers. Unbelievable value for them.
I don't understand why he accepted that.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I guess so far there haven't been a ton of other guys like they either took minimum deals. Yeah.
And also, but I do think it's going to hurt the Spurs tanking odds.
Victor Wembanyama is not going to. Well, I mean, frankly, they've done enough with the DeJounte trade that they should be.
I just saw a Hawks tweet like with Deontay in his new uniform. God, that looks weird. That's a weird one. I don't know why. It's like whenever the Spurs have these, you know, long-reached, lanky guys like Kawhi and Deontay, you kind of think, "Oh, right, this is the next one, right? Like this,
right,
you're going from David Robinson to Tim Duncan to Kawhi Leonard to Deontay Murray, and like, no, they're not finishing their careers in San Antonio, unfortunately, and now they're gonna hope to get a high draft pick next year."
Yeah,
it's just weird. But I think Lonnie Walker would have helped their tanking odds. Just give him the starting two guard spot and tell him we are demanding that you take 20 shots per game.
Right.
Off the dribble exclusively.
Before we wrap up, you mentioned you wanted to talk about the luxury tax in particular when we were talking about Drummond earlier. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Thank you. So obviously every single year we hear a lot about the luxury tax, especially over the course of free agency, because fans are keeping an eye on the salaries that teams are giving out, and they're looking at, okay, how far below the line are, you know, these teams from having to pay luxury tax. And a lot of fans are trying to justify not paying it for their clubs. You and I have spoken a little bit about this on the pod, basically saying stop trying to save billionaires from spending money.
Yes.
And I want to basically dive into that a little bit more. And I'm going to use the Bulls as the primary example because they just re-signed Zach LaVine. Last year, they got both Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan in there. They have $7.3 million left of their MLE to spend. They are about $3.5 million below the luxury tax line. And I was very surprised to see some Bulls fans argue, well, they're not going to win the title, so why pay up? Which I think is such a looser mentality when fans of any team says that, because then you're giving the team a complete out, an out they don't deserve. If you are a billionaire owner, which you are if you own an NBA team in the first place, and you are against paying the tax if you're trying to win, like I can completely understand teams that are trying to aim to be bottom of the standings that they don't pay the tax. Like that's fine. You shouldn't pay the tax just because. But if you're trying to win and if you're trying to be competitive, you should use every advantage that you have. For the Bulls, if they decide, like, remember, free agency just started a couple days ago. So I'm not here to say that the Bulls aren't going to get into the luxury tax. I am saying that right now, that's the anticipation. And if Bulls fans are right and the Bulls don't go into the luxury tax, they have 14 players under contract. If they willingly are towing that line just not to go over that line and actually pay up, that's a problem. That means that they are going into the season with a disadvantage. And that holds true for so many teams, and it bothers me that somehow, some way, billionaire owners have convinced fans that they should argue on their behalf. Like, F off. If you are in the NBA, you're here for a single reason. That is to become a champion. And of course, you want to earn money at the same time. But those two go hand in hand. Because if you become known as a penny pincher who don't want to pay the tax, it's also hurting the product. It's also hurting the level of fan interest. Fans are smart. They are eventually simply going to say, look, you are not a serious owner. You don't want to win. You're trying to earn money. We're not part of that. We are going to stop attending games. We are going to stop buying merchandise. We are going to stop doing all these things. Mm-hmm. It's just bad business if you're trying to duck the tax. And I understand that right now teams are not looking at it solely as, oh, well, we have to pay a tax line or a tax fee. It's also because they get compensated by other teams that do pay the tax.
Right.
Which brings me to this, Brian. I wonder if this is the best approach forward. The league wants a competitive product for all teams involved. That's why they changed the draft odds. Mm-hmm. So why do they have a carrot dangling in front of owners to not pay the tax? How does that make sense?
What would your solution be? Just any teams that pay the tax, it goes to the league and they like donate it to charity or something?
I don't know. That's the next step of that. But the thing is, if teams are waiting for the end of the year and they are rubbing their small hands together because, oh, they're going to get a nice tax payment, that's added incentive not to be competitive.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's been tricky for me to navigate this offseason because, you know, Lord knows I've been writing enough about James Harden's next contract. That is still yet to become official.
Yes, you have written way too many thousands of words on it. Yes.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, a lot of what I was writing, the opt-in, opt-out, blah, 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 was if he opted out, they could get access to the non-taxpayer mid-level and the biannual exception, which they did and which they have since used on PJ Tucker and Daniel House Jr., respectively. None of that was to say, I want James Harden to opt out and them to dip below the tax line.
Right.
Because I frankly don't give a damn if the Sixers pay the tax. I want them to pay the tax. I want every team to pay the tax every year. Because if you're in a league with the Golden State Warriors, who just won the title while racking up an NBA record luxury tax bill and are continuing, I mean, they lost Payton. They lost Porter, but they signed Dante DiVincenzo. They re-signed Kevon Looney. Their tax bill right now, let's see. I haven't checked what it is currently projected on SpotTrack. So let's see. It's got to be in the $100 million at least already. There we go. $133.5 million, and they only got 10 players on their contract.
And what was it last year? $187 million, right?
Let's see. Officially,
somewhere along those lines.
Spotrac has it as 170.
Okay.
So 170.3.
Right, right.
The Clippers right now currently have an estimated luxury tax bill of $143.7 million. The Bucks, $61.7 million. Your goal as an NBA team is to outlast 29 other teams. And if other teams are spending to that extent, there's no guarantee that it pays off because, I mean, let's see, you know, look at the team that paid the tax last year. Sure, the Warriors won with the highest tax bill. The Brooklyn Nets paid $97.7 million in tax and got swept in the first round. Mm-hmm. Clippers paid $83 million tax, didn't even make the playoffs. Lakers paid $45 million tax, didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, it is not to say outspending everyone else is guaranteed to win you a championship, but if you have an owner who is willing to pay in the tens of millions of dollars or even the hundreds of millions of dollars in the tax, that will give you a competitive advantage, or at least the potential to have a competitive advantage. So I'm totally with you. In circumstances where it isn't like we are so close to the apron that we could either get non-tax and biannual, or we're just stuck with the taxpayer. Like, that is the one scenario where I can understand. You have to at least analyze both sides of it. What is more conducive to building a championship caliber supporting cast around your team? Do you go option A and like try to shed salary to get down to that point, or just stick with the taxpayer mid-level? But if you enter the offseason 20 million over the tax and you still have to fill out like five or six roster spots, I don't give a damn. Just fill out your roster spots. Spend your taxpayer mid-level. You have trade exceptions. Spend your trade exceptions. Like, rack that thing up, baby. Who cares?
Correct.
It's not my money.
And that's my point. That, like, that final one, that's not your money. That's not my money. It's not fans' money. You're absolutely right. I think it is preposterous that we are still, well, not we, you and I certainly aren't, but a lot of people are trying to protect billionaire owners' pockets. Because why? Yeah. Why? Like, I even saw Clippers fans at one point make that argument. It's Steve Ballmer.
Right.
Like, I'm fairly sure he is 17% money.
Right. Yeah. And if you just look at the Lakers, who got cheap and lost Caruso, or look at the Bucks coming off of a championship, who got cheap and lost PJ Tucker, who then helped the Heat the next season to get to within one game of the NBA Finals. Like, the Bucks, who pushed to a game seven without Chris Middleton in that entire series, you're telling me if they didn't have PJ Tucker, they wouldn't have had a better chances of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals again? Nope. In which case, they would have met a Miami team who would have had PJ Tucker, who was very useful for them and started all 18 playoff games for them. Like, these are, especially when you're in the top flight of championship contenders, the salary cap and the luxury tax and the CBA limit what you can do in terms of adding talent every year. So you have to nail, like, the margin for error gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So you've got to nail more and more of these moves. And letting guys walk like that, you just don't have a way to replace them. It's not like PJ Tucker walks or Alex Caruso walks. So they're, all right, cool, I got 8 million cap space. Who am I going to sign? It's like, no, you lose these guys and you can't replace them.
Yep.
So, yes, anyone caping for billionaires right now, unless you are in a very specific circumstance where it's like, okay, if we get a little bit of more flexibility, we can get non-taxpayer and biannual, and that's, you know, $15 million dollars combined versus 6.5 for the taxpayer. I get it, because believe me, that's all I spent the last month writing about. Otherwise, no, we are not doing this. Every team should pay the tax. Who gives a damn if they get a tax payment at the end of the year or how much they pay in tax at the end of the year? This is like, if you're not rich enough to own a team and pay the amount of money it takes to build a championship caliber team, sell the goddamn team and let someone else spend their pandemic blood money on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of my final point to this. There are so many billionaires standing in line to buy teams.
Yeah.
some of whom are very, very willing to go into the luxury tax. And if you are a team out there that does everything you can not to, and you're essentially cock-blocking your own fans from having an owner who is willing to go that extra mile, mm-hmm. you know, you're shortchanging the fans, you're shortchanging the product, you're also hurting the NBA as a whole. Like, it just boggles the mind why you would go into this business to try to penny pinch. Mm-hmm. That does not align to me. Like, it's still a sport. You have to understand what your business is. Your business is to win, because your business are your fans. And if the fans sniff out that you're not serious about that, they will tune you out. Yeah. It's so beyond me. So if you're out there listening to this podcast and you're one of those people who are pro owners, reconsider. That's all I'm asking. Reconsider your position.
Yes. That is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you all, as always, for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're being hosted by Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, pray that KD does not get traded in the next few days, because I will be traveling, and unless I can figure out how to record a podcast in my car, we will not be able to record. So
no, I have a plan. I have a plan.
Okay.
KD is going to get traded on the 15th.
Ah, that would be nice. That would be very nice.
Right, because look, remember back in 2018, you and I were in Tivoli Gardens.
Yep.
And with our families, minus two kids, because we both had a kid while we, last time we saw each other. And we both took our phones out at the same time because there was a notification, and it was Kevin Love signing the contract extension with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully some news breaks while we're together, but
it has to, because we're recording a pod together for sure.
Yeah, but especially let's hope that KD does not get traded, because we'll try to get together sometime next week. But until then, hope everyone out there has a safe and happy 4th of July. Do not blow your fingers off with fireworks. Also, like, dogs hate fireworks, so if you're going to shoot off fireworks, just don't. Just sell them or throw them out.
Don't. It's also very bad for the environment, and as we kind of know, the environment isn't doing that well as it is. Like, just don't. Just don't. Celebrate by kissing your loved ones, giving them a hug instead. High five if you're really a maverick.
Right. Anything along those lines. But yes, please, I'll tweet a picture of my terrified dog on Monday to make everyone
feel bad. Guilt trip everyone. That's nice. Yeah. Love it.
All right, Mort, have a good one, and we'll talk soon.
You too, man. Don't die.